Rashid, thank you for your patience. We ran long.
So sorry about
no,
that.
No, no, no. I'm really excited. I mean, this is, I mean, I'm a fan of the pod, and I just feel like, I feel like a fan who like somehow snuck onto stage.
Oh,
like,
oh this yeah. Is cool.
Not at all. It's the other way around.
So honored to have you.
We created a podcast in hopes of getting to meet
this
you.
Is the whole thing.
We've been playing the long game.
God, I love it.
You know,
that the plan comes together.
Rashid Newsom, how are you? How is your summer?
It's going well. I mean, my husband and I have two children, so it's a tapestry of taking them to like different camps. And you sign them up for these things, you don't even know what they're going to be doing. My son, who's four, came home and announced that he is now taking archery.
Oh.
They give four-year-olds a bow and arrow, and he seems pretty good.
Oh.
So it's an exciting summer over here.
Like a pointy tip arrow?
It's all very, they do it really safely. So it's not like the sharpest of arrow, but it's a bow, and they pull it back, and they've got a target, and it goes about like 8 feet, and he hits it. So I mean, you go, what's your kid doing this summer? I'm like, well, mine apparently is learning archery. I did not see that in the brochure.
Shooting an arrow,
very impressive.
But it's, you know, he's got a new skill, which may become handy in the future.
And by the way, yes, exactly. When the grid goes down, we're going to be looking for him to save us all.
Yes. My goodness. So you got a four-year-old and?
I had a seven-year-old named Josephine, JoJo. She went to performing arts camp where they did a version of West Side Story, but they all got together and decided they didn't want to do the tragic ending. So no one died at the end of this West Side Story. They all became friends.
Oh
wow.
Very progressive.
I don't mind that.
They should do that version on Broadway. I think that would send people away with a spring in their step. The kids should lead us to a new Broadway.
Yeah.
I like that they can do that.
I mean, I love that they had no problems rewriting Sondheim. They were just like, we're going to throw this out. Doesn't work for us.
Hey, if you can do better, do it.
Incredible ear for melody, Stephen, but but we have some notes just on general tone of story.
Yeah.
Wow. That's great. And what are you doing? What particular camp have you put yourself in?
I'm back in, I'm in season two of Bel Air. My writing partner, TJ Brady, and I are the co-showrunners of Bel Air on Peacock. I will plug it shamelessly.
Mm-hmm. Do it.
We finished our first season and we were told we'd get 2 months off. That never happened. We're just back into season two somehow.
Wow. I just want to back up because you obviously are balancing thriving careers now as a novelist and a showrunner. Can you just walk us down the path a little bit? Did TV come first?
TV came first. I moved out here when I was in my, like, as soon as I graduated college, as soon as I graduated Georgetown, I was an assistant at every lot we have. I have a badge from every studio.
Yeah.
And then when I was 29, I got hired as a staff writer on the drama series Lie to Me, which was great because my dad said, you really turned it around before you turned 30. And I just thought to myself,
just in time,
where did you think I was going?
Yeah.
So I became a TV writer with TJ. And then we've spent the last, I think, 13 years just bouncing from show to show and working on show to show. And I wrote books normally during hiatus, or I tried to write a book during hiatus. And this is the first one that's gone all the way. There have been some failed attempts before we got here.
Always. But congratulations.
Thank you.
So how did you and TJ meet? What's the meet cute origin story there? That part.
I love this. So like, I have to first explain what Craigslist is, right? Like, it was like back in the days of Craigslist, there was a writers group that met at the Bourgeois Pig in Hollywood, and it met like 9 a.m. We would take the back room, and then we would be kicked out at 10 by like an Al-Anon meeting that was very militant and wanted us out. I was so poor that I would go to these meetings. You know, you were supposed to buy something from the cafe and then take it in the back. But I could not always afford to buy a muffin from the cafe. So I would do a thing where I would wait outside for someone else in the meeting to come. And I would just sort of stand next to them while they bought a coffee and a cookie and then walk to the back with them so that I didn't look like a lone bum. Just scurrying to the back room with nothing in my hands.
Yeah.
I'm no stranger to that move.
Sure. It's a hot move. And
what are you watching these days, if you are watching, if you have time to watch anything?
We just Solaris came back. We just watched that. I'm sure we'll watch What We Do in Shadows. We love that.
Okay.
I'm always a little late, so I'm just starting like Moon Knight. I think it's over. We just finished Murders in the Building, season one. And we're delighted to hear that we're so far behind. Season two is now ready for us.
It's here.
Anytime we're ready to go. So I find myself, it's weird, I work in television, but of all the medias, I'm on a 6-month pop culture delay when it comes to television.
Sure. But it's impossible not to be. That counts as on time, I think. There's just too much.
The pandemic was like a chance to watch things. I don't know when. I just assume now that there are certain shows, people tell me I will love them. I don't know what it will take for me to ever get a chance to watch them. I hear The Americans are great. And people who've seen it are like, Rashid, you will love it. You'll love it. And there hasn't been enough time.
The great thing is it'll be there. You know, you don't have to like show up at Thursday at 8, you know, or otherwise you miss it. It'll be there for you when you are good and ready.
I keep doing this. I keep telling people the same thing is true of books, because I have friends and I'm like, oh, my book's coming out. And they're like, and they're good friends, but they'll immediately go to, oh, I already have so much to read. Oh my God, I'm so behind on my reading. I'm like, well, you can still buy this
book. It doesn't
book.
Matter. Just buy the book.
Put it on. Yeah. Put it on the coffee table, and then someday you will get to it. But my God.
Yeah.
They're like, no.
The important thing now is buy the book.
Yeah. That's what I need. That's what I need from you, dear friend.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I just yesterday started What We Do in the Shadows.
From the beginning?
I'm even later than you. From the very beginning. Yeah, I had not seen it. Same exact thing. Everyone I have ever met who watches it says, this is a show that was made for you. They're 100% right. Yeah. I'm already hooked. It's perfect.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm so excited. I have so much to dive into now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it is both horrible for the TV model that people wait 2 or 3 seasons to then dive in, because we kind of need that support from the beginning.
Yeah, right away.
But it's also what's happened to the way people watch shows now. I mean, I have a sister who's 13 years younger than me, and she won't start anything in its first season because she's like, I'm not watching this and having them cancel it. So she waits until there's a second season, and then she goes, and I go, you are kind of hurting the shows you think you love, because if you're not there in the first season, that's a bit of a problem for us.
Yeah. She's got to protect her heart.
Yeah.
Because, it's devastating when we get attached to those one season shows.
I think that's part of the reason with Bel Air, we were lucky that they picked it up for 2 seasons right away. And I was like, keep telling everybody that. Let them know this will not be wasted. We will absolutely come and do more, but we need you to tune in now.
Mm-hmm. What did you grow up obsessed with pop culture wise?
Pop culture wise, and it was both my, I mean, I know way too much about it now, and I was a little ashamed of it then. I loved daytime television. I love soap operas.
All right.
I have the book on every single, like when they were like Guiding Light turned 70, I bought the book. Another World, I bought the book. My husband will come in, like literally he did this the other day, he came in. Beverly McKenzie is like a legend to me. Beverly McKenzie played, she was the original Iris on Another World. And then she played the original Alexandra Spalding on Guiding Light. And there was like an hour long retrospective on her career. It's on YouTube. There are like 325 people who've watched it. I've watched it twice. Like that's how in I am on these people.
And I don't judge. I was just a Days of Our Lives.
Yeah.
So I did catch a good amount of Another World just by default, but it really just is sort of like where your loyalty is.
Are you Marlena Buried Alive era? Like, where do you come in?
Oh, God. It was, there was a summer island. Were you a Days of
Our
Lives?
Oh, when they were all on the island and there was a serial killer?
When they were all on the island, Bo and Hope. Yeah. Sort of the heyday of Bo and Hope and John and Marlena.
No, they were beautiful.
Jack and Jen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. I met Matthew Ashford in a mall when I was in 5th grade. And it was the greatest moment of my life.
I was like, could you speak? I mean, what did you do? How did you approach? Did you call him Jack?
I
mean,
I think I said, my name's Matthew too. And he was like, great. Signed the auto. It was just a signing.
Yeah.
You know, he was churning them and burning them. Mm-hmm. And I had that signed headshot with the Polaroid of us on my bulletin board for a very, very long time.
That's the thing. That's like in my head, you know, you think, you know, I knew I was gay pretty early. I had like my first crush when I was 4. But I like to think I was fooling people and holding it together. But like other boys were buying the swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated, and I'm buying Soap Opera Digest.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And I don't think anybody can put this together or figure out what this means. And like you were like, do I watch Days? I would read the whole magazine. So I know about all of them. I know something about all of them.
Come on. The idea of a soap opera magazine is just about my favorite thing in the world. That beat exists, that
there used to be three of
exists.
Them. There used
three.
There used to be three.
Three old ones.
There used to be three. There was a little one, there was a big one, and they were all like, I mean, it was a major, I mean, when I started, it's always been in decline since like the 70s and 80s, you know, when women were really let into the workforce, and they're not going to be watching TV at 2 p.m. But even in the 90s, Young and the Restless was getting somewhere in the range of like 15 million people a day, which is just a monster number.
That's like Super Bowl
numbers. I mean,
numbers
just
now.
Crazy. So, I mean, they were big business. I mean, and they were for a lot. I mean, I also love the history of television. It's, you know, for a lot of those networks, it's the way that people don't think about it. But like the Today Show is a moneymaker for NBC. Because it's three hours of commercial time. The set doesn't change. You need three people up there just reading from a teleprompter. It's printing money. These soaps were like the same way. I mean, you had these people under really easy contracts. You're getting New York theater actors coming straight out of Juilliard who are happy to have a gig. And your overhead, I mean, they shoot the whole thing in like some studio in Brooklyn. And it was 15 million people would tune in. It was great.
Okay, I'm going to tell you something that maybe I've never told you, Matt. I once, on a visit to New York when I was 12 years old-ish, in 1983, stood outside of whatever studio it was that All My Children was taped at. I got a picture with Brooke. I got a picture with the woman who would later go on to become Hunter Tylo, but at the time was like Deborah something. Yeah, I hung out outside the studio just to like see if I could catch the stars as they walked in. And it was one of the better days of my life.
Who took you for that little adventure?
I begged my mother. And
what do you think she made of it at the time?
I think, you know, because like at summertime, I would come in at lunch at All My Children time and we would watch together. So I think she was kind of curious her own self.
Sure.
And I gave her all the clues. I mean, Mr. Police, I gave you all the clues. But they did not put it together.
Do you consider that the moment you came out to your mother? When you said, can you take me to
the
All My Children?
She didn't hear it. She didn't hear it. I had to do it again in 1993, 10 full years later, still didn't quite hear it.
Yeah.
And you know, whatever, it's a work in progress in 2022, to be totally honest with you.
But Rashid, it sounds like your family did hear it.
Nobody gasped when I broke the news. I think everybody was ready. They were ready. I mean, it was actually them telling me when they figured it out. Like I think I was in high school and Greg Louganis's autobiography came out and I bought it and I was reading it. And there's this beautiful man, you know, in a Speedo going through the water and you'd look over at your 15-year-old son and he's just tearing through this book. He was like, that was enough. That was clear enough at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you're alert, it's clear enough.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done, Rashid's parents.
Well, the thing that gets me is like, you know, I grew up in conservative Indiana, but they let me have these things. Like they didn't say that you shouldn't be reading this or what that about. Like, I mean, you know, I bought Soap Opera Digest and that was just, he's into that. He knows all about that. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm.
Hey, speaking of growing up in Indiana, let's talk about the book.
Sure.
My Government Means to Kill Me. It is a coming-of-age story, a young Black man who grew up in Indianapolis, as you did, I believe, and moved to New York in the 80s at the height of the AIDS epidemic, which you did not do, I'm assuming, because you were too young. And, you know, and obviously it's a work of fiction, but there are all these, I mean, along the way, he meets Fred Trump.
Yeah.
He helps found ACT UP. So there are all of these sort of real life references. So talk a little bit about like what the real world influences were that kind of sparked the story for you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Black guy and I'm a gay man. So just as I look back at history, I can't help but wonder, oh goodness, what would I have done during the civil rights movement? You read these stories about people during this extraordinary time and you wonder, you know, as a member of the group, what you do. And so as a gay man, I've also wondered, like, my God, what would have been happened if I'd been of age when the AIDS crisis really began and people were trying to figure out what do we do? So Trey is, I think, much braver than I am and more reckless than I am. But it was a moment of saying, well, let me just see if you took somebody with some of my personality traits and dropped them into this, what would that look like? I've also loved historical fiction. I've worked on some. My writing partner and I, we worked on Narcos with Pablo Escobar, which was like, okay, we're going to hit these real events, but we're also going to play between these real events and sort of fill it out and use our imagination. I love doing that. So like I worship like the author Thomas Mallon, who did like Fellow Traveler and Watergate and Finale. And I thought, well, I can try this. I'll also just let you in that from a writing standpoint, it's really helpful because at least you have something you know you're driving towards. You know that, well, if I hit these posts, this will hang together in some sort of structure. But I really just wanted to revisit what it is to be an activist and to be a young activist. I went to school in DC and I worked for nonprofits into my early 20s. And I was a true believer. I was very like, I mean, you go to a protest on the weekend and you write the number of the lawyer who would get you out if you got arrested on your forearm. And I really did thrive off of that. But there's also this dichotomy because you've got this great sense of purpose, but you're also 18, 19 years old. So for the whole time I was in DC, I volunteered at this place called Grandma's House, which was a group home for kids who were HIV positive or had AIDS. And I mean, they're from newborn children till about preteen, they'd be here. And I would volunteer and help them with homework and help put them to bed, and feed dinner and do all of this. Very responsible community service. And then I would leave them, get on my bike, go to a club in DuPont Circle, affectionately known as the Fruit Loop, and get hammered at Badlands or Chaos or one of these clubs. I mean, like, you just came from a place where, you know, HIV and AIDS should be at the front of your mind, and now you're out, it's 2 a.m. and you're having, you know, unprotected sex as if the first part of your day didn't happen. And it's the sort of thing that I think, it's the sort of dichotomy you find in young people a lot, because you still are under that assumption that you'll live forever. And that stays with you for, I mean, some of us, for quite a long time.
Yeah. Ooh, so let's talk through the soundtrack of Badlands.
Yeah.
And these clubs. what is playing? What is making you twirl?
What is making me twirl? Well, first of all, I'll tell you what I think is hilarious is I went into these clubs incredibly intimidated because it was the rise of the frosted tip twink. Like, oh, just, I mean, and I was everything that was not, mm-hmm. but I was lucky because it was DC. And so it's still like Chocolate City. It's still a very black population. But mm-hmm. like, it is, I mean, Mariah Carey was our queen. Sure. I mean, like, I remember songs coming on and you just would hear everybody scream and they would like suck all the oxygen out of the room.
Sure.
I do not want to upset Britney fans. Britney is, she's wonderful. She was not my favorite, but I know that Britney was everywhere and you could not, get away with
Rashid,
it.
Careful.
She's wonderful. She's wonderful. All hell Britney. I'm just going to assume Cher had something out because Cher always has something out.
Yes.
And then I love it. Kylie Minogue. I mean, like, God, that song. If you play that song now and I will get up and, I'll dance. It was great.
Yeah.
That song could be about any
of 50 different songs. Kylie's a queen. Thoughts on the new Beyonce as we talk about club music?
I mean, I love it, but I'm easy now. Like, I feel like when you're younger, you're harder on things. You're a little more like, you've got to rank them. And I know that I took a lot of pride in not liking things as much as I like them. Now I'm just like, put it on. I'm 43. Yes. Like, I'm just happy to feel anything. I don't dig as deep. Like, every once in a while, I'll hear there's a rivalry between two groups. And I'm like, guys, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'll listen to this and I'll listen to that.
Yeah. Agreed.
So tell us how you met your husband.
Boy, we met on Adam for Adam, which again, I don't think exists anymore. Like, this is pre-app.
Like Summer Island, this place is, and Frosted Tips. I am exactly in, I think I know the exact year,
2008, early 2008.
Oh, okay. All right.
And it was, and now he would claim, and he's not wrong. What I love about Atta for Atom, it was all computer based. Like you had to be in front of your computer. It wasn't an app on your phone you could take with you. So if you stepped away from the computer and someone messaged you, well, that was it. So he messaged me and he said, I ignored him. And then later he messaged me again. And I said, well, let's meet for drinks. I will say if I did see it, I'm not saying I did, but if I did see it, one reason why I could imagine I would ignore it is I lived in Brentwood and he lived in Los Feliz. And for people outside of Los Angeles, that's a long distance relationship. You know,
Brentwood also a weird place to be in your 20s.
It was where we had an apartment that got no direct sunlight, but came with two parking spaces. That's how we made these decisions.
Sure.
You know, it was like in our price range, we can do this. Who needs houseplants? Just let's live here. It was a cave. Yeah. But no, he lived on the other side of town. And then between, I think the first time he messaged me and the second time he messaged me, I got a job in between, and I thought, well, I can meet this guy after work for drinks. Because I in my mind, it was just a hookup act. I had no intentions of being snared into a long-term relationship, let alone marriage and children. But here I am.
Yeah.
And then how did the drinks, I mean, the drinks went well, obviously, but paint that picture for us.
The drinks went really well, but before we had them, we had to email each other, and Jonathan's really funny. I mean, he's so funny that before I would reply, I was like, I got to think about what I would craft these emails.
Oh, shit.
Because you were putting in links, you were putting in videos. Like, neither one of us, we're at work. We're not getting any work done. We're working on these emails. And so he was really funny. And I got to know him better than I would have known him if I just met him at the bar and we made out and, you know, got our rocks off. So I had a sense he was really good. And then he walked into the bar. It was at Luna Park. Where I asked him to get married there. We were at Luna Park. He walked in. The voice in my head said, don't fuck this up.
Mm.
Like, let's see where this can go. Just for once, dude. Don't throw this away. And so we had a really good first date. And I was like, can I see you again? My best friend Alex had told me not to sleep with guys so fast. Because let's be honest, that's what I've been doing. And so I was like, okay, I'm not going to rush this. But then later, Jonathan was like, he wasn't sure I liked him because I kept going back home to my place.
How long did you make him wait?
I mean, 4 days. I mean, it was, yeah.
That's a long time. I mean, it is. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's further than I got.
When you're young, yes.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
That's discipline.
Yeah. I was trying to break the pattern, as they say.
And then how long until you went to have that fateful other date at Luna Park when you got engaged?
We got engaged 2.5 years later, and it was the most I've ever had to lie to him. He knew, I mean, that we were going to get a ring because we'd picked it out, but he didn't know where in the window. And I think he thought it'd be closer to Christmas. And I wanted it to still be a surprise, but I knew because he knew that he had a ring that if I said, let's have dinner at Luna Park where we first met, he's going to say, oh, Rashid's going to ask me to marry him.
Yeah.
So I got one of my friends involved, Russell, and I said, why don't we say we're going on a double date and we want to meet your new boy? You want us to meet your new boyfriend and you chose Luna Park, but then Russell wouldn't be there and then it'll be just Jonathan.
Smart.
Except Jonathan, who is great at using the internet to find anything about anybody, was like, well, what's Russell's boyfriend's name? And so I made one up. And he's like, and I was like, oh, and he's from Israel. He was an Israeli soldier. He's now an architect. Like, he kept asking questions. And under pressure, I kept giving more and more answers. And he kept digging into this profile for this man who did not exist. And I was just, I mean, I was almost in a panic because I was like, what point do I like, I've never lied so much to him, but I wanted to be like, can we just get to dinner?
Yeah.
Then he showed up. And my deal was to tell him, because I wanted to, God, this is so complicated. I wanted to walk him to where we had our first kiss, which was a little down the street. So I said to him, I met him outside. I said, the bar is really crowded. It's crazy. They're behind. Russell's running late. Why don't we just take a walk? Because it's just a madhouse in there. And we start walking, and he's like, he had a hard day at work, and he's like, oh, my bag is heavy, and I was like, I'll carry it for you. He's like, my feet hurt, and I'm like, we're almost there. And then it began to click, and he realizes like where we are, standing in front of where we had our first kiss. And I just remember him like glowing. And I prepared this whole thing to say for this moment. He doesn't remember a goddamn word of it. Not a word. Like, it was just like a buzzing in his ear, because he's like, this is the day, and this is happening. We walk back, and he's like, Russell's not going to be in the bar, is he? I go, no, there's no Russell.
No.
There's no boyfriend.
No. There is no boyfriend.
Yeah.
Wow. And then, so like, when did you decide the kids were going to be?
We knew we wanted kids before. I mean, I think that was that's when I thought you wanted ironed out before you got married. Like that was an important thing you wanted to go for. Mm-hmm. We both wanted that. It was just a question of how to do it.
So how to do it?
I mean, both of us, I think, sort of agreed that there was no reason for our genetic material to continue on this earth. But there was no, that maybe it had gone far enough and let's just start with some fresh material. So we did private adoption, which just means we know who the mother is, but we went to a service where they have women who want to put their children for adoption and they choose you. So you've got to make a little cute little magazine of you as a couple, talking about all the fun things you like doing and will do with this kid. And then you you get chosen. So.
And was it a long road? I mean, I know there are often heartbreaking experiences of not getting chosen and having to jump through like a million bureaucratic hoops.
It absolutely can be. And I don't want to make light of anyone's struggle. I will tell you what I believed at the beginning and how it went. We started in January and I was like, we're going to have a baby by Christmas. I tend to be an optimistic person. I tend to be someone who's just like, it's going to work out, trust it. But I also knew that we wanted Black kids, you know? And I was like, I know that there are more of them in the system than get chosen. And so I said, you know, if we wanted a white baby, that could take some years. But I was like, the idea that there's also an African-American parent in the home and we want a Black baby, I was like, we're gonna have a kid by Christmas. We had our daughter by the middle of October.
Wow.
Like she was home in our arms. Like it was a smooth
experience. To me, that sounds like miraculous. I don't know. I have that much experience with it, but have you had a lot of friends that who've adopted and have not?
I've had friends who've like thought they had a match and then the match fell through when you're standing there and you're in the hospital. And I mean, it's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. Ours is about as smooth as it could go, but there were a lot of things. I mean, also just talking to the adoption lawyer, there were a lot of things that I knew when I listened. I was like, oh, this is in our favor. So I'll just tell you one. For example, we asked, is it going to be a problem that we're a gay couple? Are these moms not going to pick us? And the answer was, well, for everyone who won't because they object, you'll actually have another one who'll be very eager to pick you too. Because when you look at our situation, no one is going to replace the mother, right? No one. She's going to hand this baby to us, and no one else. She's not. This kid's not going to refer to anyone else's mom, which psychologically and emotionally can be very, very difficult. The idea that you're going to lose that name or that role, it stays intact. We also made it very clear in our adoption stuff that we would keep up communication with the birth mother. That we're going to send pictures. We're going to visit periodically. And we've kept up that end of the deal. But again, it meant that they knew, okay, I'm making this decision. I'm giving them this child, but this kid isn't going to just disappear into the ether. I get to be a part of the story and I get to know how the story is going. So given that was our posture, I knew that I thought that would be very attractive to a lot of the women who had to make this incredibly difficult and loving decision.
Sounds like you have had the dream experience all around.
It is
when it comes to becoming a dad. I mean, truly, just there are so many elements of this that could have gone wrong that didn't.
Yeah, no, even we went to South Carolina, and there was a real question of, you know, South Carolina at the time, and I can't imagine it's going to get better. But as it was, we weren't sure we were going to find a judge in South Carolina who would approve the adoption. Except we got lucky. We found a lawyer who goes, and this is the sweetest thing. There was a judge, because this is before gay marriage is legal as a national thing, right? So there was a judge who would take on the family court between Christmas and New Year's, the emergency court. She's the only one there. And they let it be known that if you were a gay couple that needed to have an adoption approved, come here because she'll do it.
Wow.
We went down there and it's just like gay couples with children. Suddenly in, you know, South Carolina, just getting these things approved, because otherwise you were subject to a judge who could just decide, I'm going to open this back up for review, or I'm not going to recognize this. I'm going to put this kid in foster care. I mean, like, these things could become a nightmare. So we got lucky because we were even to the approval. We found the path. I mean, wow. South Carolina was such that, you know, I'm listed as the mother on the birth certificate because it's not like two wow. spouses or anything. It was like, you know, mother, father. And we're like, okay, just sign it. Just sign it. I want the kid. Let's go.
Sorry, was it South Carolina only because you were aware of this judge, or were the kids born there? Or
the kids were born there. Their mother was there and they were born there. And so it was like, well, we got to play by the local state rules.
Right, right, right.
Which is also another nightmare of like some states you've got to stay a long time. Others, it's a little quicker. We had to play by South Carolina's rules, which meant we had to come back 3 to 6 months later with the baby and appear in court. Which is just, of course, if that were to go wrong, is absolutely just devastating. You've had this child since they right. were born for 3 months, and they could say, you know, we're remanding this child to foster care until we sort this out, and, you know, your life falls apart.
I thank you for being so open about this, because I know we have a lot of listeners who are probably exploring this path, and my husband and I are kind of, you know, dipping a toe into it, and so it's really helpful to hear from somebody who's already been through it.
I love it. I think it's, I mean, I really wanted to do it. We both really wanted to do it. I mean, it's got all the challenges, all of them you can expect. I always joke that I think it's very easy for parents to rag on their kids as just like a conversation starter. My feeling is we worked really hard to have these kids. I'm not going to like complain about them all day. They're wonderful. They do things that kids do. It's not a surprise, you know, and it's a lot of fun and it's great for all the reasons I think you can imagine, but also things that are surprising to me. Like, you know, show business is really stressful. It's nice coming home to two people who love you and actually don't care how the ratings were.
Yeah.
You know, my kids are, how was that notes call, Dad? That doesn't happen.
Yeah, no, they don't care. But they do punch up Sondheim. And that's important.
Best of both worlds.
Fearless. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a song, I can't remember what it was, but my daughter like corrected me on the lyrics. And this song came out like before I was born. And she was like, no, Papa, and she gave her version. And she was so adamant. I was like, you know what? You're right. We'll just sing it that way. What is it? You know?
Yeah. God bless.
What did your dating life look like before meeting your husband?
I wouldn't call it dating because many of them didn't come back.
They didn't come back or you didn't come back?
I didn't. No, I would. I mean, oh God, I was such a young asshole. So here's what I thought was very honest, because I thought honesty was very important to me. You would go on a date with me. We'd have a good time. We'd fool around. We'd have sex. We'd be done. Maybe we're at my place. And I would say to you, this has been lovely, but I'm not really a dater. And so I just want to keep this the way it was. I like that we had this really great experience. And if I see you around, that's great. But there's not going to be a follow-up.
Sorry, you're saying this immediately after?
Yeah, no, you're getting your things. And you've asked for my phone number, and I'm 21. And I think it's incumbent upon me to tell you that there will not be another day. Because I thought, like, what do you mean? Wouldn't it be horrible if I took your number and never called? So I don't want to be that guy.
Give people false hope.
I don't want to be that guy. So I'm telling you that this was lovely, very special experience, but it's a one-of-a-kind experience. It will not be happening again. And I hope to see you around. And by the way, this is D.C. So I go, you know, I know where you live. So if you leave the apartment building and take a left and walk two blocks, turn right, you'll see the Red Line station. And you can take the Red Line to the Blue Line, and that'll get you back to Arlington where you live. And I happen to have a subway fare thing with $1.25. That should get you back home. Because this is before Uber, right? Like, I couldn't order an Uber. So I would give them subway fare to get the fuck out of my apartment. And by the way, here's how bad it got. If you could have stayed after you left, You would have seen me stripping the bed sheets because guys were wearing a lot of cologne and I don't want to smell your cologne all night. So I would immediately strip the bed sheets, put on fresh linens so that I could now sleep in peace. I mean, but this has been lovely.
Cold. Ice cold.
It's a cold piece of work.
And you're right. It is, I guess it is good that you were honest, but I don't know, it was part of the fun of being in your 20s was wondering why the person's not calling back and, you know, hoping and, you know, analyzing and, you know, eventually realizing you were ghosted.
The truth is I couldn't handle dating. The truth is I wasn't ready to do all of that and bring someone in to see me. Like, I mean, it's almost like I knew there was a version of me that was very charming at the club on a date experience. Like, I knew how to bring you back and get you to bed. I didn't know who to be the second night. And I don't know, and I certainly didn't know if you'd like that guy. So, like, you like this guy, you met this guy, leave with the memory of this guy. And it was all I could really take. Like, I also remember I had the rule, and I think this is ridiculous too, there would be gorgeous guys, and they would, like, hit on me and want to. But if you were over 25, I said, no, I have a rule, I don't go over 25. Because that was a man, and I couldn't handle that. So there were a lot of rules.
Yeah. It's healthy boundaries and also terror of intimacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
And when you say you met this guy, you like this guy, who was that guy? Was that a persona? How was he different from you? What were they seeing?
I mean, it's the best of. It's your best jokes. It's your best stories. If we're going out to dinner, we're going to that restaurant where I know exactly what to order and the staff likes me. I lived in this apartment building next to the Russian embassy, which is one of the higher points in DC. So the view from my rooftop was a commanding view of the city. Mm. And I would tell you about this view. And instead of saying, hey, do you want to go home and bang? I'd be like, would you like to go? I could show you the view of my rooftop. Would you? That was the euphemism got you there, right? And we're going to go up there and we'll see. You'll see. It was incredible. And we'll start making out. And then we'll go down to my apartment and we'll have sex. Well, I can't take you to the rooftop again. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's once you've seen that play, you've seen that play. And I didn't yet have anything else in the bag. I need a fresh audience. Nobody goes to see the magic show twice. You know, and so that was how I felt.
Well, thank God you aged out of that.
Developed into a full person.
Yes.
Yeah.
It takes a while.
Yeah.
It takes a while.
Because you developed into a full person, but also you met the right person at the right time. What was it about him, do you think, that made him stick?
Well, he was very nonchalant. Like, he liked me, but he wasn't pushing too hard. Mm. You know, like I felt like he let me set the pace and grow into it. He's really funny. He's really funny. And I mean, I said this in our wedding vows. He's the cure to boredom. Because I do find a lot of people are boring. I mean, they're sweet. They're nice. They're boring. I mean, you know, sure. you've had enough after about 4 or 5 dates. He would just say something into it. And I'd be like, what is that? I'm sorry. And it was just absolutely fascinating. And we are a good fit because I think he felt like socially, he's a super nerd and he would get excited about things and want to go into great detail about them. And he found the one person who was like, oh, tell me more. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got Swedish pop music? I don't know anything. Start at the beginning. And so that part has always sort of, that's remained. We want to tell each other things immediately. Like, I can't wait to go tell him. I mean, I can't wait to tell him about this. Like, he's so excited, you know? I mean, he listened to the boy band podcast.
Oh.
Like, Waiting for Impact.
Dave's.
He ate that entire thing. He's listened to your adoption podcast. He's the one person.
Oh, wow.
He has consumed all of media.
Great. He's
truly. Yeah.
Oh, no, we love him. We love him.
If he found that adoption podcast, he is doing some deep dives.
Oh, he loved it.
And by the way, I don't even know how good is that fucking podcast? It helps you understand so many aspects of the experience that people normally don't talk about.
Well, by the way, I mean, because we did, it's part of our prep and it's ongoing. Like, we still read parenting books and read things about adoption because, you know, you're still in it. What we found, and it was almost overwhelming, was that there's so much. You're like, well, are we supposed to read all of this? So we divvied it up. But he would listen to that podcast because, I mean, we want to know about that experience because we're raising two people having that experience.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just sort of, yeah, we try to cover a lot, but he covers more. He's really good.
Well, thank him for both of us.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
And congratulations to the both of you.
Yes.
Thank you. Other. Thank you.
I did just say it, congratulations, which is not how you say it, but whatever.
Congratulations and congratulations. And
congratulations.
I'll take them both.
On the book. It is out. Is it out now?
It comes out August 23rd, but you can pre-order it now.
Pre-order. So important.
So important. It has to happen, guys. We really need it. So.
Yes.
It's called My Government Means to Kill Me. Pre-order the hell out of that thing. Yep. And everybody watch Bel Air on Peacock.
Season 2 coming. Coming soon.
Rashid Newsom, thank you so much for being here.
It's been delightful. This has been so fun. Thank
You're
you.
You're delightful.
Homophilia is a World of Wonder production, produced and edited by Kate Moldenhauer.
Special thanks to Randy Barbato, Fenton Bailey, Steven Sims, Edward Bochniak, and the whole team at World of Wonder. We love you!
And theme music by my Ben Wise.
Yes, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HomophiliaPod. You can give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening. We love you!